Martin Chuzzlewit, Dickens's fifth book, written in 1843, relates the hero's experiences in America. Martin's arrival from England at the port of New York is described by Dickens in this passage.
Some trifling excitement prevailed upon the very brink and margin of the land of liberty. For an alderman had been elected the day before, and party feeling naturally running rather high on such an exciting occasion, the friends of the disappointed candidate had found it necessary to assert the great principles of purity of election and freedom of opinion by breaking a few legs and arms, and furthermore pursuing one obnoxious gentleman through the streets with the design of slitting his nose. These good-humoured little outbursts of the popular fancy were not in themselves sufficiently remarkable to create any great stir after the lapse of a whole night. But they found fresh life and notoriety in the breath of the newsboys, who not only proclaimed them with shrill yells in all the highways and byways of the town, upon the wharves and amongst the shipping, but on the deck and down in the cabins of the steamboat, which before she touched shore was boarded and overrun by a legion of these young citizens. "Here's this morning's New York sewer," cried one. "Here's this morning's New York stubber. Here's the New York family spy. Here's the New York private listener. Here's the New York peeper. Here's the New York plunderer. Here's the New York keyhole reporter. Here's the New York rowdy journal. Here is all the New York papers. Here is full particulars of the patriotic loco-foco movement yesterday in which the Whigs were so chawed up, and the last Alabama gouging case, and the interesting Arkansas duel with Bowie knives, and all the political, commercial, and fashionable news. Here they are, here they are. Here's the papers, here's the papers. Here's the sewers exposure of the Wall Street gang, and the sewers exposure of the Washington gang, and the sewer's exclusive account of a flagrant act of dishonesty committed by the Secretary of State when he was 8 years old, now communicated at a great expense by his own nurse. Here is the sewer. Here is the New York sewer and its 12,000 with a whole column of New Yorkers to be shown up and all their names printed. Here's the sewer's article upon the judge that tried him day afore yesterday for libel, and the sewer's tribute to the independent jury that didn't convict him, and the sewer's account of what they might have expected if they had. Here's the sewer! Here's the sewer! Here's the wide-awake sewer, always on the lookout, the leading journal of the United States, now in his 12,000 and still a-printing off. Here is the New York sewer! It is in such enlightened means, said a voice almost in Martin's ear, that the bubbling passions of my country find a vent. Martin turned involuntarily and saw, standing close at his side, a sallow gentleman with sunken cheeks, black hair, small twinkling eyes, and a singular expression hovering about that region of his face which was not a frown nor a leer, and yet might have been mistaken at the first glance for either. Indeed, it would have been difficult on a much closer acquaintance to describe it in any more satisfactory terms than as a mixed expression of vulgar cunning and conceit. But this gentleman wore a rather broad-brimmed hat for the greater wisdom of his appearance, and had his arms folded for the greater impressiveness of his attitude. He was somewhat shabbily dressed in a blue surtout, reaching nearly to his ankles, short, loose trousers of the same colour, and a faded buff waistcoat, through which a discoloured shirt frill struggled to force itself into notice, as asserting an equality of civil rights with the other portions of his dress, and maintaining a declaration of independence on its own account. His feet, which were of unusually large proportions, were leisurely crossed before him as he half leant against, half sat upon the steamboat's bulwark, and his thick cane, shod with a mighty ferrule at one end and armed with a great metal knob at the other, depended from a line and tassel at his wrist. Thus attired, and thus composed into an aspect of great profundity, the gentleman twitched up the right-hand corner of his mouth and his right eye simultaneously, and said once more, "It is in such enlightened means that the bubbling passions of my country find a vent." As he looked at Martin and nobody else was by, Martin inclined his head and said, "You allude to..." "To the palladium of rational liberty at home, sir, and the dread of foreign oppression abroad. returned the gentleman, as he pointed with his cane to an uncommonly dirty newsboy with one eye.
To the envy of the world, sir, and the leaders of human civilization. Now let me ask you, sir, he added, bringing the ferrule of his stick heavily upon the deck with the air of a man who must not be equivocated with, how do you like my country?
I'm hardly prepared to answer that question yet, said Martin, seeing that I've not been ashore.
On Dickens's second trip to America in 1868, more than 200 members of the press attended a farewell dinner in his honor in New York. Dickens's speech of thanks to the guests at this banquet contained the words which, according to his will, must be appended to every copy of American Notes of Martin Chuzzlewit that were to be printed in the future, so that his earlier denunciations of America might not stand unmodified.
When I received an invitation from a private association of working members of the press of New York to dine with them today, I accepted that compliment in grateful remembrance of a calling that was once my own, and in loyal sympathy towards a brotherhood which, in the spirit, I have never quitted. To the wholesome training of severe newspaper work when I was a very young man, I constantly refer my first successes, and my sons will hereafter testify of their father that he was always steadily proud of that ladder by which he rose. If it were otherwise, I should have but a very poor opinion of their father, which, perhaps, upon the whole, I have not. Hence, gentlemen, under any circumstances, this company would have been exceptionally interesting and gratifying to me. Gentlemen, so much of my voice has lately been heard in the land, and I have, for upwards of 4 hard winter months, so contended against what I have been sometimes quite admiringly assured was a true American catarrh, a possession which I have throughout highly appreciated, though I might have preferred to be naturalized by any other outward and visible means, I say, gentlemen, so much of my voice has lately been heard, that I might have been contented with troubling you no further from my present standing point, were it not a duty with which I henceforth charge myself. Not only here, but on every suitable occasion, whatsoever and wheresoever, to express my high and grateful sense of my second reception in America, and to bear my honest testimony to the national generosity and magnanimity. Also to declare how astounded I have been by the amazing changes that I have seen around me on every side. Changes moral, changes physical. Changes in the amount of land subdued and peopled. Changes in the rise of vast new cities. Changes in the growth of older cities, almost out of recognition. Changes in the graces and amenities of life. Changes in the press, without whose advancement no advancement can be made anywhere. Nor am I, believe me, so arrogant as to suppose that in 25 years there have been no changes in me, and that I have nothing to learn, and that I have nothing to learn, and no extreme impressions to correct from when I was here first. And, gentlemen, this brings me to a point on which I have, ever since I landed here last November, observed a strict silence. They're sometimes tempted to break it, but in reference to which I will, with your permission, beg leave to take you now into my confidence. Even the press, being human, may be sometimes mistaken or misinformed, and I rather think that I have myself on one or two occasions, in some rare instances, known its information to be not perfectly accurate with reference to myself. Indeed, I have now and again been more surprised by printed news that I have read of myself than by any printed news that I have ever read in my present state of existence. Thus, the vigor and perseverance with which I have for some months past been collecting materials and hammering away at a new book on America have much astonished me, seeing that all that time it has been perfectly well known to my publishers on both sides of the Atlantic that I positively declare that no consideration on earth should induce me to write one. But what I have intended, what I have resolved upon, and this is the confidence that I seek to place in you, is on my return to England, in my own person to bear for the behoof of my countrymen, such testimony to the gigantic changes in this country as I have hinted at tonight, and also to record that wherever I have been, in the smallest places equally with the largest, I've been received with unsurpassable politeness. delicacy, sweet temper, hospitality, consideration, and with unsurpassable respect for the privacy daily enforced upon me by the nature of my avocation here and the state of my health. This testimony, so long as I live, and so long as my descendants have any legal right in my books, I shall cause to be republished as an appendix to every copy of those two books of mine in which I have referred to America. And this I will do and cause to be done, not in mere love and thankfulness, but because I regard it as an act of plain justice and honor.